Brown, almost our culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Talk a little bit about the O'Reilly departure, what this means for Fox News, but ideally what it means for business in general, what it means for doing things that, regardless of your claims, just kind of keeping a clean slate, right? Kind of keeping proper parameters with there are places you simply do not cross professionally. We'll talk about that a little bit this afternoon. Also, looking at a potential planet that could have life on this planet and what this means when it comes to faith, God, religion. My 9-year-old likes to say, well, if there's life on other planets, then God isn't real. That's what Catholic school does, I suppose. But we'll get into that discussion this afternoon as well. And also a DACA, right? The dreamers that they call them, these who are came here as children are being protected under the law. Now, one of these guys getting deported in California and what this means when it comes to this provision and deportation. We'll talk about that this afternoon as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. So O'Reilly out on Fox News, the really face of Fox for such a long time. And the question is, where does he go from here? He's got a big name and kind of a brand all its own. Will he do the Glenn Beck thing and go do his own thing? Or will he look at this as an opportunity to say, oh, maybe I need to slow down anyway? Time will tell. We'll see where this goes. My guess is he will launch independently. We'll see. Because he's got a big following. He always has. And he could do that with a subscription service, make all the money he needs. Not that he needs to make more money, but he could do it. And he'd be just fine. Fox News, on the other hand, bleeding with advertisers who had pulled from the show, a significant drop in advertising numbers. And of course, it's business. So when it comes down to business, these guys have got to make decisions based on what is the best decision for them moving forward. And if they can't see a workable path, then this something's got to be done. And that's a big, tough decision. But it also tells you what behavior, professional behavior, truly means, just how important that professional behavior really is when it comes to guarding reputations. And perception is reality. Now, sometimes there could be misinterpreted cues. I believe that happens. I believe there are those, certainly women, who could assume that anything is there's sexism, there's such rampant sexism, which there is, that anything could be interpreted as being sexist. I know those individuals. But then at the same time, if you've kind of got a serial situation of a repeated, obvious behavior that is just part of the individual or the dynamic or the environment or the culture, then we got a problem. We got a real problem. I hope with Roger Ailes being out and Bill O'Reilly, maybe Fox News can take a different approach and see things as and really begin to clean up their act. Because I mean, I think you got to look at this. Here are guys who are in a generation, right, that they're in their 70s and there's something about that generation, especially that generation, that had that kind of 50s childhood idealism that they could do anything, be anything, get away with anything, American dreamism, at the same time when women were still, and not that they're completely embraced as equals now, but undoubtedly there was a time of that post-World War era where women were supposed to be housemakers. They were supposed to be there to please the husband. And go back and look at this. There are, these get circulated from time to time on Facebook, crazy magazine articles from women's magazines talking about how to please your man. Like, what are the duties? What's a woman supposed to do? This kind of checklist of making sure that the man is the man and all is good and he's taken care of and satisfied and the house is clean and the meals are cooked and the kids are in bed and the guy's had a hard day and, well, you need to satisfy him, whatever, right? I mean, that stuff was out there. And there was this assumption that women were there as kind of for the men to, as objects, right? As to be objectified. And I suffer from that upbringing. I suffer from that. That was kind of the attitude that I grew up with. My dad was a ex-military coming to kind of a maturity in the 40s and 50s, and that was there. That was completely, whether it was overtly expressed or not, it was undoubtedly part of the dynamic that, hey, you know, it's, women are here to enjoy, right? And getting exposed to things as a young man that certainly young men don't necessarily need to be exposed to ever, and certainly not from their father. But that's what I was introduced, because it was just, it's how it is. It's how it is, son. They're here for us, more or less, right? And again, it wasn't expressed in those certain terms, but it was presented as this is why women are here. Women are here to please men. And when you've got guys like O'Reilly and Ailes who have been in this environment, this is what you get, right? You just get this, women are supposed to be treated this way. Doesn't make it right. I'm not defending them, and I'm not saying that, you know, they can't help themselves. They just kind of grew up in that. But my goodness, we're still trying to shake loose of that, obviously. And you know, I hope that with younger men, younger generations, I hope that we're beginning to stem that. I hope we're getting beyond that disparity, that gender disparity and the sexism that was rampant in the office place of the 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you name it. There was something there that has held over, left over, and obviously still a part of what we're dealing with now. But you know, I remember, it's been years. My goodness, I can't remember how long ago I saw this. And I've always kind of had my suspicions of O'Reilly. Like, you know, he kind of comes off as this very confident, very together, very focused individual, but he's probably really hard to work with. I've always thought that. Then to see this outtake of him, not on the O'Reilly factor, but going back to Inside Edition or wherever he was at the time, it's a 30-year-old piece of footage, and this guy is just ripping his producer up one side and down the other. Yeah, I get being frustrated with yourself and kind of being like, I need to get this. You know, you've messed something up enough times and you finally just let you walk away from it, you come back, whatever. I've been in those modes in production work. I know what it's like. But he's not doing that. He's not taking it on himself. He's blaming everybody else around him and railing on them with expletives out the yang. And you can tell this guy is just nasty. He is just not a good guy. You can tell, you can see that this is the kind of guy he's going to steamroll on anyone he can. He's going to treat them like dirt along the way, and he's going to get to where he's going to go. He did it. But at a cost now that I hope is an eye-opener. And I hope that is what this is. More than anything, O'Reilly's going to be okay. He's going to land on his feet, and even if he retires, he's fine. But can we stem this attitude moving forward? Can this be a wake-up call? Can the Cosby thing be a wake-up call? Can we get a wake-up call? We could say, look, guys, we can't treat women this way. We cannot treat them as if they are our property. Yeah, there are women who will, who undoubtedly will present themselves as property, more or less. They will work the angles. I know this. I've experienced this, and I'm not saying that this is womankind. I've known women who know what they have. Let's put it this way. They know well what they have, and they're fine with working it. Let's just leave it at that. But there are other women who are not trying to flaunt themselves. They're not trying to be the sex object. They're not trying to be the individual who is going to manipulate based on what assets she has. And then when men approach these women, and whatever the advances are, I don't know, harassment could be spoken, could be physical, could be subtle kind of innuendo-y type of stuff. It happens. And fortunately, these women are taking a stand. They're drawing a line. And I would hope that we would all wake up and say, wait a minute, how do we get here? Let's all draw the line. Let's all decide now that we're going to be more respectful. And, you know, and more respectful, not just of women. I mean, more respectful of everyone. How do you treat the lowest rung of people? How do you do that? I mean, this is what I've learned in my career. If you treat the janitors with respect and dignity, you're going to treat everybody that way. Yeah, I was with a friend of mine who's got a management level position, kind of a senior level position, and I saw him with a cleaning person and said, hey, you know what? Hey, we got pizza, by the way, if you want to get it. Like, that's the first thing he said to this woman. I mean, he treats everybody like that, right? I mean, that's beautiful to see. That's a witness. And you're like, yeah, you can trust this guy, right? He's got everybody's back. He's not going to go and do something crazy and put himself in a compromising position or treat someone undignified. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Venezuela going crazy, protests in the streets, GM plant there apparently taken over by the authorities, whatever that means, so halting production in that plant. Venezuela's had its challenges for some time and now kind of coming to this powder keg of a really kind of a revolt at this point, and where it goes from here, time will tell. We've seen similar, albeit different, activity when it comes to stepping out in protests from college kids in Berkeley, California, with this Yiannopoulos, Milo, however you say his last name, when he was scheduled to appear there and the students freaked out. Now they're saying, Ann Coulter maybe doesn't need to be on campus after that incident in February. They're thinking maybe we learned our lesson, but now apparently Coulter is planning on going ahead with this even after the university canceled. She's going to do something there. I don't know how that works, right? How do you have an event canceled and then you go, I guess, just do it independently, free speech space? I don't know how it's going to work. But the one thing we cannot be afraid of is someone's reaction to what we do. Now, I'm no fan of Coulter. I got to be honest. I think she's nasty. I think that the attitude that she has is degrading. I think that she says things and presents a lot of challenging proposals that are truly very disrespectful and degrading to people. And not just certain people, as like I just said, I think she's nasty, which I don't think that's degrading. I think I'm just speaking the evidence. The evidence is clear. She says nasty things. It's very clear. But at the same time, she's entitled to do that. I don't want to stop her. I'm not saying she must be stopped or how dare she say that. Say what you want. Be who you are. That's your thing. You're going to get a following. You're going to get certain people behind you. It's going to happen. But, and really, it's more of an and than a but, and go do your thing and don't worry about who's going to react. And I think that that's what we're seeing here. I respect that. I may not agree with her. I may not think that she's the most genteel and or sweetest of individuals. I may not want to listen to what she says, and it may be very tiring for me to have to hear what comes out of her mouth. But at the same time, I'm applauding her to say, go do your thing. Yeah, go do it. Don't be afraid of the reaction. Don't be afraid that somebody's going to set something on fire. Because that is terrorism. If protests have led to the point of being fearful about what you do, well, those guys have won. They've proven that they could prevent whatever it is that they've got a problem with from happening because they were reactive enough. That's no place to live. That's no place to have to function in this world of, I've got to, I can't respond to this because of what may happen. We can't have that attitude. So it's unfortunate that the university may say, well, we can't do that. And I get if they're going to get property damage and they're assuming, well, this thing's got set on fire. The last time we had a conservative on the Berkeley campus, maybe we should not do that again. It was probably not the best choice of individuals to have. So if we want to keep our property intact and nothing burned to the ground, maybe we need to watch that. So I get it. But at the same time, we've got to be willing to step out and trust that what we have to say is going to be heard by those who will hear it and not necessarily fear the repercussions. You know, we hear a lot about speech and faith and all of these things that are seemingly under attack, or there are those who are convinced everything is under attack. And the bottom line is anything could be, right? If somebody doesn't like what you present, whatever that is, the color of your shirt, the way you wear your hair, or the hair that you don't have, there's always going to be somebody who has a problem with something. Let them have it. Go to the place where your strength is, play to those strengths, play to the areas that obviously there's resonance and responsiveness, and find that world. Find that world. Whatever that world is, find that tribe. That's where this works. And it's always going to be something that, having done this as long as I have, the critic's math, as John Acuff calls it, John Acuff, who is an author, speaker, was with Dave Ramsey's organization, now I think completely independent from what I recall. But he wrote a book called Quittereth that was kind of his first launch out into the world of independent author guruship, talking about basically quitting what you do to find what it is that you're supposed to do. But he also talks about this concept called critic's math, and we can all suffer from it. I don't care how long you've been at what you do. You're always going to be tempted to think that those who are saying bad things, those who are criticizing you, those who are nitpicking on the most ridiculous possible, you name it, are right. Right? There's going to be an echo in the back of your mind that says, wow, I think these guys might be right. And that can, if you let it, get the best of you, because it's always something that can eat and gnaw and connect in a way that is unfortunately potentially derailing. If we let ourselves go in that direction, yeah, we're going to get derailed. But the key is to, as Winston Churchill says, maintain enthusiasm from failure to failure. You know, so in those areas where we haven't really failed, it's just what people are saying, we still have to maintain enthusiasm. And that's the challenge. So as crazy as this Coulter Berkeley thing is, it's analogous and metaphorical to something so much bigger and something that we all experience. You know, now, this day and age, when we're all media professionals, because we have media platforms that we control, we could put out anything out there and people are either going to like it or they're not. We've just got to be prepared to roll with whatever. Yeah, if somebody hates your post, if somebody is so politically charged against you that they start railing on what it is that you say, let them go, right? Let them do their thing. Because I promise you this, it's a bell curve. Just as many who hate you will love you and come to your defense, right? And then the rest, the vast majority, are kind of just there in the middle, taking it or leaving it. Eh, whatever. That's what you're going to get. And the sooner we come to grips with that, and the sooner we embrace that, the easier it's all going to be. Unfortunately, as we know, we don't come to grips with that. We don't embrace that. We have issues when it comes to all of this, that we assume the worst all the time. And then when we have any kind of opposition, whatever it is, we just automatically think, well, probably a sign that I shouldn't go further with this, or what, you know, crazy stuff, crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. But that negative ramification, amplification, ripple, that negative ripple, it just ripples. It ripples so intensely at times that we just hear that criticism. We don't hear the praise. And that's one thing I do. I try to, as crazy as it sounds, I don't care what praise I get. If it's just the slightest amount, I intentionally try to amplify that and say, wow, okay, somebody said something pretty good here. All right, well, hey, I got that, right? And I know not everybody's in the position that I'm in, as putting myself out there repeatedly, whatever. I'm a musician, I'm an artist, a songwriter, I'm a media person, I write, I record, I talk, you name it. I post, I'm always putting something out there. It's just a press, literally, a press of press that I'm pushing all the time. And some react very negatively. And it's tough when it's really negative. It's tough when it gets personally negative. I had that certainly through this election cycle because of my outspokenness on the human dignity issues and that which I believe as Catholics we should be concerned about. And some of that criticism was harsh. Not just critical, but pretty darn diabolical, literally in the truest sense. So trying to break something apart, like I'm going to bombard me with this negativity until I break, almost, is what it felt like. But even then, somebody say something good, I'm going to amplify that. I'm going to hinge on that one. I'm going to hang my hat on it, because that's what I want to hear. And I know that most in the middle, they're leaning slightly one way or the other, but they don't have enough concern to even worry about it, right? Do your thing. That's the message here. Do your thing. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Apparently polls out saying that the involvement of Trump's family in the White House is inappropriate. The majority seem to disapprove of the nepotistic realities that seem to be at place here. And with that, I would question, because these are, I would assume, the same who want family values, right? So is it not a family value to say, well, I'm going to take care of my family, and that means being nepotistic about it? Or is a family value tough love, and you say, oh, you go do your thing, I'm going to do my thing? What if you had such a working relationship, which obviously Donald Trump has had with his daughter Ivanka for years, that she is such a trusted resource, this particular family member in your case is such a trusted resource, that you really feel like they are a part of the way you operate? I think that that's where he is at this point. And then Kushner, of course, as a son-in-law doing his thing, kind of comes as a package deal. Honestly, I may be the odd man out on this, but I don't see anything wrong with family dynamics that work. I know family businesses that have multi-generations and siblings and you name it, everybody functioning, working, and having each other's back, and it works beautifully. Why should we criticize that? Because it's politics? Well, if you want a businessman, which is what everybody said they wanted, at least enough of the electorate vote to say they wanted that, this is what you're going to get. Why would you expect anything less? So I don't necessarily have a problem. I might be on the odds there, but I really don't see it being an issue at all. Other interesting news, this potential for life on other planets seems to be getting more and more attention, and there seems to be more potential for some reality there. As we see this, as my 9-year-old says, well, if we discover life on other planets, then that means God doesn't exist. As he says, well, if we're created in his image and likeness, then we're the only ones. And I said, Zach, first off, we don't know that there's life on other planets. And if there is, which there very well may be, that doesn't change what we believe. It doesn't change what we believe. We don't say, oh, well, why didn't we know about that? Or who are these, what are these forms? Because there's other life on Earth other than humans. Humans, in our unique creation, as we are the image and likeness of God. That's what we have to understand, which then reflects into all life. Absolutely. We happen to be that which is most good, according to creation. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that other things are not good, or other things negate the existence of God. And I know, having those kind of conversations with a 9-year-old is not exactly easy. But I would hope that we would have a little bit of confidence in saying, first off, who cares? As I've said many times, bring me the rotting, dried bones of Jesus from 2,000 years ago that you found in a tomb that wasn't empty, where the stone wasn't rolled away, but you have evidence that this guy was actually dead and did not resurrect. And you know what? Nothing changes for me. I'm going to still have the same attitude that I have. I'm going to still have, God willing, the same heart that I have. Why would I not? Why would I not? As I've said many times, I realize it's a blessing the more I understand. And, you know, we call faith a gift, gift of faith. It's given to us. Well, I've had a gift of just having the ethics that I've had. Does that mean I haven't done stupid stuff, that I haven't been dishonest along the way, or perhaps not on the up and up on everything that I've encountered? You know, we all make mistakes and we do selfish things. I've been selfish, absolutely, and I've done stupid things, but I promise you I've not done things to intentionally harm anyone, ever, anywhere, anytime. Have I gotten my emotions? Have my emotions gotten the best of me? Yes. Have I done things that did hurt others? Yes. But was it intentional? No. Was I trying to make someone less of anything? Because no, never, none of that. What I have done, I've done selfishly, and I regret hurting people. But at the same time, I've had an attitude of people are important, as important, if not more important than me. And as long as I keep that ethic, that's how this works. I've always had that. And I would keep that. I mean, it's ideally the Christian ethic. As I've said, I was attracted to Catholicism because my personal way of doing things kind of overlaid into this faith in a beautiful way without a lot of contradictions. So I was able to say, yeah, this is a fit for me. It makes sense. So why would life on another planet negate that? It wouldn't. I'm going to have the heart that I have. I'm going to continue to put others before me in every way I possibly can. So show me the evidence, whatever. We'll see what you got. So we're talking about these dreamers. There's an actual provision, federal provision legally, that says there's some degree of protection for these kids who did not come here as could not have come here with any intent for anything other than just to be with their families, because their families were immigrants, illegal immigrants, came across the border with their kids, and as a result, their kids are now kind of caught in this limbo, which they are supposedly not targeted for deportation. But then there was one of these guys who is a young man in his early 20s who was targeted, and now there seems to be a pending lawsuit regarding his deportation. Now, as it appears, there's some question about whether or not he traveled from the U.S. to Mexico voluntarily, meaning apparently that he now has negated any of his freedoms as a dreamer. And that kind of seems to be the question here. Did he violate some sort of provision there? But in all of this, many of these kids have grown up in going to our schools, speaking our language, certainly working somewhere, somehow, paying taxes, contributing to the economy. Time and time again, this is what you're going to find, because some of these kids have been here for 20 years. I don't know how old this kid was when he came across the border. Maybe 3, maybe 5. Who knows? He wasn't an immigrant. He was with his family. And now, regardless of whether he went home to visit family, because many of the immigrants here in the U.S. still have ties to their families, why does that matter? I don't get why that is even an issue. But the one thing that we have to see more of is how these individuals, be they immigrants, refugees, migrants, whomever, we have to see them for the value that they have as people, first and foremost. Now, if you want to be all, utilitarian, right? If you want to boil it down to the utilitarian understanding of there's value in these people for what they can provide, well, then look at that too. Go ahead, look at that. I don't have a problem with that. If that helps you see a picture that you don't see now, because all you see is the quote-unquote legal ramifications here. But Leo, we're talking illegal immigration. No. I've had a dollar for every time I had that conversation. But that's not what this is. This is a provision provided by the government to say, we got to realize there's something about these kids who are basically Americans. They've never known anything else. Yeah, they might be technically illegal. They weren't born here. They've never been naturalized. There's nothing that says they truly have any legal status. They don't have Social Security cards. They don't have whatever. But they've been in the system for a long, long time. They've been going to school. They've been educated. They have our values. They are Americans. They speak more English than they do Spanish. And the English they speak, they sound like Americans in their dialect, right? This is true of so, so many. Now, the numbers say there's close to, I don't know, 700,000. I'm surprised there's not more. But regardless, why would we not do everything we can for this? And see, again, just take it to the total utilitarianism. There's an investment there. There's an investment from our taxpayer dollars, educating. There's an investment from the communities that have supported these families in whatever ways they have. Why would we not try to protect that investment? Why do we simply want to say very quickly, very swiftly, very definitively, this is done. Thank you very much. Head on back home. Because that's not home. Home has been here. So we'll keep an eye on this story and see where it develops. And my guess is if we're seeing one, we may see others. And there could be some degree of legal action. And then more, ideally, more momentum for the people who are immigrants, who are people who deserve our respect, who have inherent equal dignity. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.